Hello and welcome to Off Curve. I'm Wicked Good and I am talking to you about Hearthstone as I am driving home from work. It is Thursday, July 26th, 2018. Second show in a week. I told you I was going to try to make up for last week. So you got no shows last week. You got two shows this week. This is probably going to be a little bit of a shorter one, but this is, I wasn't 100% sure what I was going to talk about in this episode. And then I had a Twitter discussion that kind of led me into a topic, so we're going to talk about that. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm pretty much unchanged on ladder. I got up as high as rank 1 in Wild with the Evenlock. It hasn't changed. I haven't changed the list. I had a really good streak on Monday, and then on Tuesday and yesterday, I just started running up against a bunch of bad matchups. Probably wasn't playing super well. I was way more tired the last 2 days than I was on Monday, so I'm sure that has something to do with it, and I might go back to it. I did try to play, I played an arena run, I went four wins on it, just trying to get myself a little bit back into the groove, because we're evaluating all of the cards for arena in addition to constructed, and I have admittedly not played nearly as much arena as I probably should have to do that, so I'm probably going to take some of my gold, put it in some arena runs. I found I actually had an extra ticket from the last event, because I left one with two losses, so that was just pure profit. So I'm probably going to do a little bit more arena. I also found, so today, Frodan posted this odd control warlock deck that I am completely into. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, because it is magnificent. I played one game with it while I was waiting to get on the train, and so basically the idea is that the odd hero power makes your it makes your hero power free. So it costs you 2 mana, but you don't pay for drawing a card in life. So you can just tap with Reckless Abandon because you're not actually paying any life for it. And so what you do is then you don't need as much healing because you're not tapping. You're tapping, you're not paying life for your taps, right? So you can afford to tap more. You don't need to run as much healing. So Dark Pact being 4 is not a big deal. You don't need Spellstone as much. You don't need Siphon Soul, as at least for the heal. I mean, it would be nice to have it for the removal, but you just get to play demons and you play Skull, and you don't actually need Gul'dan at the end because you don't need it to heal, and it's powerful, but when you don't need it for the healing to heal back up at the end of the game, it's actually not as important. So this plays Jiraxxus instead, and I haven't actually gotten to play Jiraxxus again, but I'm very much looking forward to that, because Jiraxxus is fun. So going from Mecha Jiraxxus to regular, you know, vanilla Jiraxxus is pretty cool. So I'm going to play that. I may stream tonight. I'm hoping I can work it out so I can stream tonight. If I do, then I'm definitely going to play this on stream. Even if I don't, I'm probably going to be playing some of this, because, like, nobody expected. I ended up playing this one game where I played against an odd paladin, and I kind of just sat around and let that, you know, dropped the Tar Creeper on 3 and just kind of dorked around until turn 5, and they were on the coin and they didn't coin up level up, so I was able to get down a Despicable Dreadlord. They took it down to 1 mana, but they could 1 health, but they couldn't clear it, so I cube packed it. So now I have 2 Dreadlords. Now I'm doing 2 damage to their board, so they're desperately trying to clear it. They put down a Stonehill, and then they drop a Shield Bearer behind it. I don't remember how 2 damage got done to the Stonehill, but I ended up clearing it by playing a Voodoo Doll on the Shield Bearer and then rat catching the Voodoo Doll and then trading the rat catcher into the Stonehill. And then they finally get to 7 mana. They play Hero Power and level up, and I play a third Despicable Dreadlord. And so the Dreadlords just clear their board by themselves with the level up, and they just conceded after that. And I was, like, laughing. I'm laughing now even telling it, right? I was laughing for a good, like, 5 minutes after that game, because it was just so absurd. So I'm looking forward. Like, the deck looks weird, but it feels like it works, just because drawing two cards a turn with no drawback is pretty good. And you have enough things like Mortal Coil and other removals to kind of get you through. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm finding the fun. I may still make another last push at Wild Legend. I'm not stressing it, though. You know, it's like, if it happens, great. If it doesn't happen, I'm not gonna worry about it too much. I think getting up to rank one with that deck at least gets me back to rank five next month, which is fine. That's kind of what I want. And, you know, I'm not dead set on getting double legend. I would like to, but, like, I want to make sure I'm getting legend, in standard. And then if I can double legend, it's great. I do enjoy wild, but I don't... It's a little bit more frustrating in some ways, just because there's a lot more... there are a lot more high roll decks. Like, one game I lost was to coin innervate an Alarmo bot into Sogoth the Slitherer on turn one. So those things kind of happen, but, it is what it is. So, but, that's not what we're here to talk about this week. So let's get into this week's topic. So, what I want to talk about this week was kind of inspired by a Twitter conversation that I kind of stumbled upon between Cream Puff, who does Top Deck Kings, which you should know because if you're listening to this, you should probably be listening to him too, because we're kind of do fairly similar things. Cream Puff's a higher level player than I am. He does actual competition. I just, spout things and I get to legend, but I competition stresses me out too much. And, the ADM who does, Ego Check, which is an interview podcast, and he does other things he's a psychologist. So he does things from more of like, how the brain works type of perspective. So they were talking, Cream Puff was posting a link to Death Sea's stream, and Death Sea is the person who put together the first Shudderwalk Shaman that I was successful with, and also the one that I was coaching Daring Alkaline on earlier in the month. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Daring Alkaline for getting the legend with that deck. That is quite an accomplishment, especially because when he and I did that coaching session, he was pretty close to the rank 5 floor. So being able to, take that all the way up with pretty much just Shudderwalk Shaman is a pretty, pretty big accomplishment. But so, Cream Puff was saying that, this is worth watching because Deathsea's one of the best Shudderwalk players, and he had some really good advice on playing the deck, and the DM was saying that he didn't understand why it was a difficult deck, because it seems like when you play against them, the game plan is fairly straightforward. And, if they get their cards in, they just win, basically. I'm probably oversimplifying it, but, and I understand that feeling, and I want to kind of talk about that feeling of feeling helpless against a deck that seems like it beats you no matter what. Because Shudderwalk can 100% feel that way, and a lot of combo decks can feel that way. I know Raza Priest was certainly that way. Some of those decks, when you're not, especially when you haven't played them, and that's where I'm kind of getting to, it gives them a little bit more power because you don't really understand what they're trying to do and what they're struggling with. So, and I want to take this back to something I kind of mentioned in passing, but I want to talk about it a little bit more in detail. When I started playing in Wild after I got to Legend and Standard, I was struggling a lot with Tilt because I kept running up against two decks in particular. One of them is Big Priest. And Big Priest, like, it bothers me, but it's like the devil I know. Like, I literally wrote the guide to Big Priest when that deck first came out, right? Like, I know Big Priest. I know how it works. I know what its weaknesses are. I know what its strengths are. And I know how it wins, and I know how it loses, right? Like, I know that deck. I know what I would do if I'm playing that deck. It's not a big deal. I know if they get Barnes on 4, they're going to win. Just because that's the way that the deck is built. It has so many resurrect effects that it's very hard, unless they just draw very poorly, to beat them. And ultimately, like, Big Priest in Standard was a legit control deck. Big Priest in Wild really is, like, more of all-in-on-the-resurrect shenanigans. Like, it's not really, using Resurrect for like a finisher or for, you know, an end game plan. It's basically just, I'm going to put as many big things on the board as quickly as I possibly can and see if you can deal with it or not. And you know, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. A lot of times you can't. But the other one that I was getting tilted by really hard was Kingsbane Rogue. And if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you will know my misadventures against Kingsbane Rogue. There was one month in particular where I basically ran into a whole bunch of them as I was just about to cross the threshold over to Legend, and I needed to take a lot of breaks that month in order to not tilt myself way back below rank one. And I realized, like, maybe a couple of weeks ago that the reason that that Kingsbane Rogue was tilting me as much as it was is because I did not understand the deck. Like, you know how the deck feels when you're playing against it. But when there's a deck, especially a complex deck or a deck that just seems to have your number or beats decks that you like to play, very often what will happen is that those games are way more difficult than they seem, but you're only seeing the results of it. Like, there's a lot of thought that goes into at any given turn with something like a Kingsbane Rogue or a Quest Rogue. Even Big Priest, though, that's a little bit more straightforward. There's still, like, if Big Priest in the games when things don't go perfectly, there's still a lot of thought that needs to go into each turn to make sure that you're balancing your removal properly so that you can live to be able to start resurrecting all the big guys. So, and I think this kind of goes back to Shudderwalk Shaman too, and any combo deck that seems like it just beats you no matter what, is that those decks seem really simple because the game plan for Kingsbane is honestly is pretty straightforward when things go well. As it is with Shudderwalk Shaman or really any combo deck, when you draw all your pieces, it's very straightforward. With Kingsbane and Wild, you're looking for either Kingsbane or Shiny Finder, and you've got three draws to find one. And then you're looking for weapon buffs, and you're looking for Leeching Poison to give it lifesteal. And then you just keep buffing your weapon, removing minions, and then once you start running out of stuff to do, you have Coldlight Oracles, and you have Shadow Steps, and you have Vanishes to start drawing a whole bunch of cards while ideally burning some stuff out of your opponent's deck in the process. There are mill rogue versions of it in Wild, but the typical version is not necessarily milling as a primary game plan as much as it is just drawing a lot of cards and doing so in a way that your opponent is going to burn cards in the process and not get the benefit of the draw. So that's it, really. And they have saps and vanishes so that if you start putting anything on board, then they'll sap or vanish whatever you put down and then start drawing cards again and making you draw cards so that you're either blowing up that minion when it goes back to your hand with a full hand, or it starts, or it goes back to your hand and then make you burn other pieces that are more important. And, you know, me being a control player, found this incredibly, incredibly frustrating to play against. And it felt like, because I didn't understand how the deck works, right, that it felt like I was just powerless. Like, it didn't matter what I was going to play. It was going to win no matter what because my deck just didn't line up against it. So that's kind of where I was at the beginning of the month. And then I decided that I needed to craft Kingsbane in order to get over that. And I think I did to some extent. It's still difficult, but I want to talk about what the difference is now that I've done that and how that you can take this and apply this to, you know, decks that are frustrating you to play against. So after I had a bad streak with the Evenlock, and I stopped climbing with it, and I started running up against a lot of Kingsbane decks, I said, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'm going to craft the card. I'm going to take whatever, like, the best Kingsbane list is in Wild. I saw Shocky was passing one over to Nate Wolf from Into the Wild, and I took that. And I'm going to play it. And if I win, great. If this is really a great deck, he said he was able to take it to Legend. So, like, okay, this is clearly a good deck. Like, let me see how it works. Either I'm going to figure out either I'm going to win my way to legend with this thing because it's OP, or I'm going to lose my way down to the floor and I'm going to learn things along the way. And this is really where sometimes you just need to learn from the school of hard knocks. And I lost a lot of games. I lost myself all the way down from somewhere in the middle of rank four down to the floor, rank five floor. And I ended up running up against a lot of aggro. And even when I wasn't running up against aggro, I was starting to see where the wheels fall off. And that's the important thing, right? Like, I didn't appreciate the difficulty of the deck. I knew it was a difficult deck to play. I didn't appreciate what specifically made it difficult. And I think that playing it, or watching a player who is very good and is very good about talking through their turns, so you can see their hand in the situations they're going through and explaining it to you as they're going, is probably the alternative if you don't have the cards for it or you can't do like a borrow deck thing. But what I found was that, and this is obvious when I say it, but it's not obvious when you're playing against it. There are two things that I did not really consider objectively about the deck from my perspective as the opponent. One is that they only have two saps and two vanishes for actual removal. It really doesn't feel that way when you're playing against it. And they often will have them because of Cold Light Oracle. Like, the thing that Cold Light Oracle does is it just gets you to the rest of your deck. And it gets you to the things that you need, along with the Elven Minstrels that get you generally more Cold Light Oracles or Shiny Finders, because there aren't that many minions in the deck. So, but there is a limited supply of them. Like, you have to be a little bit picky with how you use a sap or a vanish, because if you use it on the wrong minion, you're not really doing anything. And that's really sometimes your only way out of a situation. Like, there's not a whole lot other than that and like the Doomerangs in order to get yourself out of sticky situations. And the other thing that I learned, again, this seems really obvious when I'm saying it, but it didn't feel obvious to me until I played against it, is that the deck really, really needs that weapon in the hand, in it actually equipped. And in the games where you don't draw a Shiny Finder and you don't draw a weapon, that deck feels like a brick. And, you know, against aggro, it's not even enough, because it takes you a couple of turns to really ramp up to be able to do things, and you're still, a fan of knives aside, you're really only removing, like, one minion a turn with your face, and that can still hurt if you don't have the power-up in lifesteal, or you haven't found lifesteal at all. So, some of the things that I learned about playing against the deck are, I wanted to put a nuisance into my deck, and the reason is that, is it going to remove the weapon permanently? Absolutely not. But that said, if I can shuffle that weapon back into the deck, the Kingsbane Rogue needs to spend time and resources digging for it. And that, as playing even Warlock at the time, gives me a game plan. So I put a nuisance into my deck, and I said, you know what? I'm gonna hard mulligan for it. Well, I'm not hard mulliganing for it because I'm assuming that it's Odd Rogue, right? So I'm never really hard mulliganing for it, but I'm gonna tap aggressively to try to find it. And if I do, then what I'm gonna do is I'm going to ooze the weapon as soon as possible, because then there's the least likelihood that they have either a Shiny Finder or they can start Cold Light Oracling to find it back. Like, they have to go digging. And that gives me the time that I need to set up, because it can't dig and address your board at the same time, right? Like, what the weapon gives them is the ability to remove your threats while still advancing their game plan. Once you remove the weapon, even if it's just temporarily, then that gives you a window to be able to build up a board and make them both address your board and dig for the weapon at the same time. It doesn't always work out. In fact, it works out fairly poorly, but going into that game with a game plan, as opposed to going into it without a game plan and just assuming that I'm going to get wrecked because they're always going to have the exact answer to whatever I'm presenting, is a huge difference in preventing the tilt. I still lose most of those games, let's be clear, but first of all, I'm getting back into respecting my opponent again. Because one of the things that I've talked about, I don't remember if I talked about it on the show, I know Blister Guy talked about it on Walk to Work, that coming out of a conversation that he and I had, is that one of the things that will lead you to tilt is that if you are not respecting your opponent and you're believing that you're getting beaten by somebody who is playing a deck that is stupid simple to play, but playing it poorly and still winning, or just winning through RNG. And that is the highway to tilt. So by understanding what the deck does and giving myself a game plan against it, even if it's futile, but at least giving myself a way that I can win, even if it's a low percentage, helped me play against that deck better, helped me not get tilted when I ran into it. It's not always the case. Sometimes you run into that after a string of big priests and you just need to shut down for the day. But, you know, any of these decks that seem to win very easily, a lot of the time, that's somebody who's played them a lot and they understand how the deck works. And, you know, making those decisions when you don't have the perfect hand is a lot of the skill that's involved in some of those combo decks. So now that I've talked about that, I want to kind of take that back around and talk about Shudderwalk Shaman. And because I've played a lot of that deck, obviously, and I've coached that deck. And kind of take that around to what is the difficulty involved in Shudderwalk Shaman? Why are pro players calling this a difficult deck? Because it is. And then how do you play against it if you're not someone who's playing as a Shudderwalk Shaman? So Shudderwalk Shaman, at its core, is really about three things. There are three kinds of cards in Shudderwalk Shaman. There are cards that contribute to the combo. So you have Shudderwalk, obviously, you have Grumble, you have two copies of Life Drinker, you have two copies of Saronite Chain Gang, and Azolo, which can be part of the combo or not, as extra insurance. You have removal, which is a lot of the deck. You have hexes, you have volcanoes, you have sometimes you have earth shock, sometimes you have lightning bolt, you have lightning storm, you know, those types of things. You have other you know, you can use your minions as removal as well. You have a lot of cards that serve as removal, that just basically, because your goal as Shudderwalk Shaman is just to get all the pieces down and then keep yourself alive long enough to get through to the combo. You also have things like Glacial Shard and Kel'Seth that help you in the early game just kind of stave off aggression. But maybe they're not removal, but they're control tools. And then you have draw. You have two copies of Manitide Totem, you have two copies of Acolyte of Pain, you have two copies of Farsight, and you have Sandbinder or Hemet, usually one or the other. And if left alone, your goal is to basically draw as much as you can, play out your combo pieces as quickly as possible, and then combo off. So why is this difficult? So, first of all, things rarely go as planned, right? Like, knowing, it's a control deck, so you need to know what your opponent's doing, you need to know what pieces you want as early as the mulligan. Because, especially against a deck like Odd Paladin or Odd Rogue, if you don't have the right pieces in your mulligan, you're just going to lose off the bat. The other problem the problems that Shudderwalk Shaman runs into are tall boards that have greater than 15 health because they're out of the reach of Volcano. Repeated boards, like something like what an Egg Hunter would present. And basically the continuous pressure is a problem because most of the big board clears, aside from Hagatha, overload you. So what happens is that whenever you're choosing to use an AoE as the Shudderwalk Shaman, you're giving yourself two less mana the following turn. So whenever you're doing that, you're kind of boxing yourself a little bit into a corner, and especially when you're having to do it early, it's very possible to lock yourself out of your next turn. Like, there was a replay of Ridiculous Hats that I was looking at when you first started playing the deck where he lightning stormed on three, and my reaction was, I think you wait until at least turn four to lightning storm. First of all, because you need to get more value out of your clears, and also because you want to be able to give yourself the option to do something. You really don't have many things to do below three mana in that deck. So the overload really does hurt you a lot. So it's kind of, it's kind of tempting against a Shudderwatch Shaman to play around the removal, and sometimes you just need to not. Because sometimes the way that you beat Shudderwatch Shaman is to just continuously make them have the answer. And I think that's one of the reasons that people lose to Shudderwatch Shaman a lot, is because they will try to play around Hex, and they will try to play around Volcano, and they'll try to play around Lightning Storm. And at a certain point, you can't play around things anymore. You just need to keep presenting threats in their face and make them continuously answer them. And even if they have the answers, the overload of the mana may not be there. And so that's how you beat that deck. And if you let it go too long, I mean, sometimes they're just going to draw the answers and they're going to have the right things that line up, and that's just the way it is. But sometimes they're not going to be there. And the other thing that is difficult is that you need to balance, as the Shudderwatch Shaman player, you need to balance when you need to draw versus when you need to remove versus when you need to just play out your combo pieces. And that's really a lot of the difficulty. And sometimes you just guess wrong. You will get greedy with one of your AoEs and get blown out by something you didn't account for. Or you'll let a board live one turn longer to be able to play out some of your combo pieces to try to end the game sooner, and you'll get blown out by some lethal that you didn't expect. So, yeah, they have a lot of healing, but you can also take advantage of that by getting them down to a reasonable life total and then bursting them down, especially if it's unexpected. So, but a lot of that difficulty comes in, even if you get everything to go right, you still need to get the combo to go off in a lot of cases. And this is another place where it's very easy to mess up. It's kind of like you need to account for how critical is the combo to you. Like, and that's kind of understanding the matchups too, because there are some matchups where you don't care, where all you need to do is outlast your opponent and you win. And there are some matchups where you'll have Hagatha and you need to think long and hard before you play Hagatha. Because if you play Hagatha, all of a sudden your hand management gets exponentially more complicated. So what will happen with the Shudderwatch combo is that sometimes, like some percentage of the time, you will get Grumble before you get Shudderwatch, before you get Saturday Chain Gang, and that's the end of your combo. I think we all know this, but you know, there's a lot that goes into managing that. So it's a matter of how important is that. In some matchups, you don't care. You'll just play Hagatha. If you get one Shudderwatch, the 6-6 will be enough to end the game. And sometimes you don't even need the combo. Sometimes you just get Kaliseth on 2 and you get minions and you pressure that way. And no, recognizing that that's your win condition is another part of the skill that's involved with the deck. Sometimes you just need to win through that and give up on the combo entirely. But once you get to the point where the combo is your primary win condition, you need to really manage that. And if you play Hagatha, all of a sudden it gets very hard to empty your hand. So the thing with multiple Shudderwalks, especially once you play Zola, is Zola's going to put 9 mana Shudderwalks in your hand. And you need the room for the 1 mana Shudderwalks in order to be able to continue the combo. So what that means to you is that you're constantly balancing drawing and emptying your hand and removing minions and playing out your combo pieces and trying to do this in this delicate dance where everything kind of comes together and you're also not dying in the process. And sometimes you have difficult decisions on any given turn where you need to prioritize one over the other and you choose wrong and you lose. Or you'll play Hagatha because you felt like you needed to in order to not die. And then all of a sudden, you get a bunch of spells that don't have targets and you can't get them out of your hand fast enough and you just can't combo off. Excuse me. So there's a lot to manage there, and making that difficult for the Shudderwalk player, like putting, you know, as much as you can pressure continuously, makes all of those decisions more difficult. Now granted, some of their combo pieces help. Life Drinker heals them, Grumble gets back more chain gangs, whatever. But recognizing that you can slow them down by pressuring them and basically going face unless you are removing a source of card draw for them, because the key to Shudderwatch Shaman really is drawing as many cards as you can, because cards get you close to your combo, but cards also get you answers. And one of the things that I talked about with Alkaline when we were doing the coaching session is that very often, in the face of, like, early pressure, I will just throw down an Acolyte or a Manatide knowing it's going to die. Because in that case, it is effectively 3 mana, heal 3, draw a card, which is almost a shield block, and that's fine. But when you can allow the shaman to not do, or not allow the shaman to do that, that's when you can start getting ahead of them. So, again, this is all a matter of, you know, playing the deck or watching somebody who plays the deck really well and seeing what their thought process is. But once you understanding what your opponent is playing will help you be able to both play against that deck better and also be able to stave off the tilt that comes from playing against a difficult deck like that. So that's what I would recommend, and that kind of goes both to what I think the conversation that Cream Puff and IDM were talking about, which is why is it difficult, and also kind of comes back around to something I've been meaning to talk about for a while, which is how do you let these decks not tilt you? So hopefully that helps. I don't really have any great takeaways other than play the decks that are tilting you or watch good streamers play them, and that will kind of help you to be a better player in general and also be able to deal with coming up against those decks and ladder, and maybe you'll turn some of those losses into wins. Alright, so that's all I have for this week. I actually do have a question that I've been meaning to get to for a while, and I'm unfortunately going to have to let it go for another week because I talked too long, and I want to do a little bit more research on it before I answer that, so hopefully I'll be able to get to that next time. But hopefully this is helpful for you all. Hopefully it's a little bit different than the card review episode you're hearing from everybody else. But, you know, I think that sometimes it's very easy to get stuck looking to the future in reveal season. And sometimes you also just need to kind of focus on the meta that's in front of you right now. So hopefully this is helpful. Anyway, so you can find announcements for the show when new episodes go live and when I post other new content to the site at OffCurve on Twitter. You can also visit the website for links mentioned in this episode at offcurve.com. I will have a link to Frodan's Odd Warlock so you can try it because you deserve joy in your life. So you should go give that a shot. I only played one game with it. It may not be great, but he took it to Legend, so it's at least worth giving a shot if you need something different. You can follow me on Twitter at WikiGood. You can also find me on the Happy Hearthstone in probably about a week and a half from now. I would imagine that we're going to be recording the first part of the card review episode, so if you do want to hear what I have to say about the cards, you can follow me on Twitter because I've been posting reactions as they come. But you can also hear Andrew and I talk for 3 hours at a time about all the cards one by one and get opinions on, you know, how viable they're going to be, how much you're going to see them, and, you know, in what situations they can be good. So do check that out as well. And, you know, you can also subscribe to his Patreon and get access to the spreadsheet. If you want our immediate reactions, you can get that now, too. So you should do that because Andrew does good work and you should support him. Other than that, you can follow me on Twitch. I stream usually Sunday nights. I've been doing that pretty regularly. I may throw another midweek stream in every so often. Hopefully tonight, I'm hoping. Knock wood. You know, but that's kind of more dependent on, you know, schedule and my energy level at the end of the day. But I do stream there at WickedGoodFM. And please do leave a review on iTunes. Those do help a lot. And, you know, sometimes you just need to know that, you know, I don't want to say that, but, you know, you want to know that you're helping people, right? Like, I do this because I want to. I don't do this for money, obviously. I don't run a Patreon of my own. I just do this to help people. And because, you know, well, I also do it because I don't want to type the same thing in Discord over and over again, let's be real. But, but you know, I want to help people. I want to help people enjoy the game more. So, you know, knowing that I'm doing that is always, you know, helpful. So, you know, do leave a review if you, you know, if you have the time and you happen to be, you know, in the podcast app or on iTunes, you can do that pretty easily. And it helps out a lot. It just helps, you know, people find the show, and helps, you know, when people are searching for content, they can find me, or, you know, tell a friend too. That's always helpful. If, you know, somebody's looking for a podcast to listen to, you can throw a name out here. That helps too. But anyway, that's really all I have for this week. I am not sure what I'm going to talk about next week, but I may do another mailbag episode. So if you have questions, do send them in. It's always better when I know that I'm answering I'm addressing things that, you know, you all want to hear about rather than just what I think you might want to hear about. So if you do have a question, you can either DM them or mention them to @offcurve or, yeah, that's really the best way to do it. I mean, you can send them to me in Discord too. If you, you know, I'm in pretty much whatever Discord, just, you know, type out Wicked Good, you'll probably find me. If Ridiculous Hat's there, I'm probably there too. And, you can send them to me there also. And I will try to get them on, the next episode. So anyway, thank you as always for listening. I know you have a lot of choices for, you know, where you can spend your Hearthstone listening time, and I appreciate you spending it with me on my drive home. So, until next time, good luck in this last meta of the Witchwood, and, good luck achieving your goals. Get, you know, good luck with that last minute push, and, be good to each other. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.